All right. Well, Kate, we are so excited to have you here today. I know that you were sent to us by your VGP practice coach, Julia Bear, and we're so thrilled to have you. I was looking forward to this conversation. You have been a VGP member for a long time, and we don't often get a lot of these opportunities when we meet face to face with all of our members in these conferences to really like get to know you. And I know obviously Julia knows you very well. So Sean and I are excited to kind of dive in and learn more about you and your story and your journey really in vet med.
Well, thank you. I'm tickled to be here. I'm very happy. Thank you.
We're glad you're here too. It looks like, are you in Chicago right now? Is that where you are? Lovely Chicago.
I am outside, not in the city, just in the burbs.
I was reading your bio and I thought, did we know each other, or did you know of me when I was in Chicago at the Veterinary Specialty Center?
No, I wasn't.
Oh, was that before you got there?
It was, yeah. I wasn't in medicine at the time. I think I was probably out in Colorado or some mountain state at that point.
Yeah, but we have that in common, yes. Too, because I started my veterinary career in Denver at the Veterinary Referral Center of Colorado.
I did not know that. I love that.
Yeah, well, just the whole thing. I have very, very specific memories, wonderful memories of Colorado. And just the state is beautiful.
It is.
And then, of course, I moved to Texas because of work, but my husband and I moved there from Chicago. So that's kind of interesting. So most people that aren't veterinarians found their way circuitously to veterinary medicine and surprised themselves by being in veterinary medicine. So do you fall into that category?
I do. It was a bit of an oopsies. I came from Colorado. All my family lived back here at the time. And so I moved back here to be with them. And I was in radio at the time. And I was working at a station down in Elgin. And radio, as much as I love it, it's just not my cup of tea. It's a little cutthroat. It's a little competitive. And just there's not that team camaraderie that I love. And so I was at a station where I wasn't really happy, really digging my peeps, and was looking for something just kind of part-time to see what was out there. Saw a job for a part-time receptionist at an animal hospital and applied, and then I didn't get it. They called me back like a week later and asked me if I'd be interested in part-time, and I said, yeah, let's give it a go. And that's the rest is history, right?
Well, A, funny you didn't get it, because how many times now have we been in a hiring position where we're like, I like that man, I like that woman, and then you hire somebody else and go, oh man, I shouldn't have hired them. And then you're when they do quit, you're like, oh yay, I can hire the one I wanted to hire. But you weren't just in radio, you were like on the air, right? You were an on-air personality.
I was.
Because you have this melodious voice that sounds like it would be like the animal whisperer's voice. Is that genetic, or just have you always been like that? Or
you put it so nicely. I've always just been told I have a face for radio.
Oh no. That's horrible.
No, I'm kidding.
You're cute. Stop it. And I've been told I have a face for radio too. And I always took that as a compliment. Maybe I need to rethink that. No.
No. No, you've got great energy too. Like even just being here with you, you know, from the second that we started talking, you've got great energy, but also perfect for an animal hospital. I know you were in culinary arts for a little bit, and that was a big chunk of your early career, right? So talk about that, because I mean, in my mind, I see a lot of correlation between culinary and veterinary. So talk about what that was like.
I ended up getting a job in a restaurant and just fell in love with the field, fell in love with the creativity of it and the passion and the craziness and the team camaraderie. That's, you know, I'm a social creature, and being in that team setting where, yeah, you know, you have people that you're really in the thick of it with, even just going through a shift, even if it's a 6-hour shift in a restaurant, and just that, I don't know, there's a fire and there's a funness there that you don't have in radio. And it was a much more individual sport in radio. You know, you had to be pitted against other people for sales and things like that. So that's where that kind of competitiveness came out. And I thought it was ugly. I thought it was an ugly part of it that I just didn't like. So
you get into restaurants where, as Rachel mentioned, I think there's a lot of good intentions in restaurants, just like in veterinary medicine, but there's a lot of crazy folk And I say that with love.
A lot of egos.
And yeah. Well, and a lot of addiction, a lot of poor impulse behavior, a lot of all that kind of stuff, brilliance with lots of psychological damage. You see that a lot in restaurants. And I think there is a parallel to veterinary medicine. The difference being that the success rate in veterinary medicine for businesses is much better than restaurants. But were you a cook? Were you a chef? Were you an owner? Mm-hmm. What was your thing? And then why did you leave that?
I was a cook. I started in the dish pit when I was about 18 and worked my way up and really got the bug working for a couple of folks that took me under their wing and you know, got me some training and really got me into it. And I bought it hook, line, and sinker. I loved every aspect of it and learned as much as I could and kind of went up through the ranks and just cooked in different settings for years, different restaurants. I was a private chef for a few years. I did catering. I've kind of been all over the field in it. I never fully delved into owning a restaurant or anything like that. I don't, you know, that's a whole other cup of worms. But yeah, just, you know, it fed that creative side. My dad is in radio. I think you mentioned earlier, it is in the gene. Yep. Papa's got the pipes. Uh-huh. And so he got me involved in this group of stations out in Denver. And so that's why I left the culinary world and went to give it a try somewhere else and do something different.
My God, you should be doing voiceovers for VGP educational material.
You've got my number.
She should be the voice behind the camera for everything that we do. That would be fantastic. Because it really is. Yes. It's, you have a great voice. It's like this alto soothing kind of, anyway. So cooking, people. How do you land at a veterinary hospital?
Yeah. Like I said, by mistake, looking for just kind of something to tide me over. I wasn't looking to get in the field. And I grew up with animals. I grew up on a hobby farm. I loved animals. Initially wanted to be a vet, but I don't have that science and math background. And as much as I tried to fit my circleness into that square peg in school, it just didn't go. You know, I took this to kind of figure out what I wanted to do next. And this ended up being the thing that I wanted to do next.
Well, Kate, I have to ask, I am curious then, you know, in 1 month's time, you basically decided I'm here for good. So was it working in vet med, would you say? Was it the hospital that you were at in particular? What was it that made you decide oh my gosh, I found my calling. This is where I want to be forever.
I think vet med, I think, you know, that first connection that you have with a client, and I came in as a CSR, so I didn't have the tech background and that science background. I came in on the people side. And that first positive interaction that you have with a client where you're helping them and you can see the help that you're giving them, it's helping their pet, whatever the situation is, it's kind of magical. And it's a little addictive in a sense, you know, when you're able to help and you're able to communicate and you're able to see that something that you did turned out to be good for someone's pet, which we all love so much. And for them, you know, it's kind of a magical side to it, I think. And that's the first side that hooked me.
The EQ of that is literally being of service. That, you know, looking for someone, when we're looking for emotionally intelligent people to work with and be around, one of those competencies is that you get at a spiritual level, for lack of a better descriptor, what being of service can do for you and what it can do for your soul and what it, and some people just aren't there and never will be, even though they have good intentions, right? And you know those people by when they have to be of service, they kind of feel insulted by it or feel like it's beneath them. And it's not, they're not being nasty. It's just like, they ain't cut out for this work.
We're all different. Yeah. Teach their own. Yeah, we have to all be different. That's what makes the world go round. But yeah, it's definitely not for everybody.
Yeah. Well, and Sean, you always refer to these as your psychological paychecks, right? Those are the really warm, fuzzy moments that happen throughout every day in the hospitals. Like, I mean, I really don't think you can get through a day without those moments. They do exist. I just think that sometimes they're overpowered by a lot of the other toxicities and stresses that happen. But you've been in practice now for what, about 10 years or so? Is that right?
I think about 13 or 14. Yeah. Yeah. You know, I mean, like I said, smooth sailing the whole time.
Yeah. Well, what do you do now? What do you do now?
Now I'm a practice manager.
Ooh, la la la.
Yeah.
So tell us about the size of your job and the scope of your job, because every practice manager is one of those things. It could be anything from the assistant to the doctor to the de facto owner, because the doctor's never there, and everything in between. So tell us kind of about your job, and then take us back and how you got there, just so we know what the 10-year journey, they can picture it.
So I'm at March Animal Hospital.
Okay.
And we're in Arlington Heights. We're just northwest of Chicago, so northwest Chicago burbs. And we are a 3.5 doctor practice. So we've got 3 full-time doctors, and including the owner, and 1 part-time doctor. And we've got a team of about 20 in total, 21. And yeah, so we've got, you know, our groups of CSRs, we've got a lead CSR, we have our wonderful nurses and our head nurse, and then the doctors and myself. So I work really hands-on with the owner, and it's kind of the two of us, and then our 2 other leads, which is the lead CSR and our lead nurse, and we're a little foursome.
Is this the hospital that you started out in, or did you evolve to this hospital? Wow.
Yeah, I've been at the same place this whole time.
Okay.
We've seen new ownership and new teams and all sorts of stuff. It's been a fun, bumpy, interesting ride.
Well, can you talk through what some of those challenges were? Because I know one consistent theme also we find in VetMed is there's always that temptation to go, right? Things get hard, especially with all those challenges, culture changes, ownership changes. That could be a lot, and not necessarily directly on you personally, but sometimes all of the impact on the team members becomes a direct impact. So can you talk through what some of like the challenges you faced over the time that you spent in VetMed? Like, what did those look like?
Yeah, I think learning more of the medicine side and understanding what the doctors and the nurses need, that's still a challenge just because my background is different. So being a practice manager, but being really involved in labs and inventory and that kind of thing, those are kind of weaknesses that I have that have been, you know, I think they've become strengths over the years as you learn and you just put yourself out there and admit that you know nothing and you're a sponge and you just take it all in. And I think, you know, I think with some practice managers, you're supposed to automatically know those things, or it's at least assumed that you automatically know those things. And I've been very kind of open about what I don't know. And I think that's helped me throughout the years and helped, you know, allow me to accommodate to this field. And I think seeing the transfer of one owner to another was a big chunk of time and a big challenge. You know, with the previous owner, we had a completely different team, and the practice manager was let go of before that transfer. And I was kind of standing in her place without being the practice manager and without having any of that experience. And, you know, so kind of being there for that, and the transfer, like I said, the transfer of ownership was very, very unique. It's a unique skill set, but I'm really glad that I was there for the beginning, middle, and end, because it's that skill set that I don't know if a lot of people have it or not, but it's I don't think it happens that often. And it's been able to allow me to really learn how to stick it out and how to work through those changes that you can't foresee because you don't know what you're getting into.
What skill set are you referring to?
Patience.
Okay.
I think patience and openness and being willing to kind of go with the flow and go with anything.
Again, and you know me, we're going to talk about it from an emotional intelligence perspective, but that is the ability to adapt, right? The ability to think your way through a problem rather than react your way through a problem. So would you say, I mean, it's a pointed question, but not everybody that jumps into veterinary medicine aspires to or gets into management, even if they aspire to get into management. Would you say those skills, your soft EQ skills, if you will, have helped you in that journey? And where or how did you get those skills? And again, folks, I want you to hear that what Kate referred to them, just in our own nomenclature, is this skill set, right? I think we want people to understand through this podcast that part of being successful is developing unique skill sets, right? So riff on that if you can.
Well, to be frank, I learned a lot of them from you and from VGP. Honestly, did not know what EQ was before VGP conference, before my first conference. I was a different leader back then. I always had leadership tendencies. I've always been a little bit bossier. I've always been a little bit more, I see a path and I'm a problem solver and I'm like, okay, my way is the right way. I know how to get us there. Learning how to not be reactive before learning how to have more empathy and more compassion. I really kind of learned what not to do through my own actions and going through the process of pathway planning. And I'm not, I'm not trying to blow smoke, but it's been a game changer. And you hear that from time to time from your other guests on the podcast. And it's really true. You guys, I think, have hit such a huge amount of people in the teachings that you share. Because you do. I mean, if you get into one practice manager's mind and that practice manager takes it to their hospital and spreads it amongst that hospital, that's everybody in that hospital. And then they take it and spread it. So that's pretty cool.
Most successful people, whatever that means, have some sort of vision of success in their head, like mm-hmm. something that drives them. Sometimes it's negative energy, and in my case, it was both. But I always had this idea of, and I didn't even call it EQ then, but I knew that I had had this gift of my life was kind of shit. Like, so I didn't get handed the best life from birth to like 18. Mm-hmm. But there was always this kind of internal optimism around, I'm going to do something about this. Something great is just around the corner. And we now call that optimism. Yeah. But the reality is when I discovered self-growth, emotional intelligence, that I didn't have to be a victim to how I was scripted. When I discovered that, my zeal in life became, how do I get this to other people? And it was just veterinary medicine that was the godsend, that was the vehicle for me. But when I hear you say that and other people say that, it was like, that's what happens. That's entirely why I've followed my own bliss, if you will. And it makes my heart sing when you say that. So I really appreciate that. It's very, very nice. Well, it is. Can you hear it? Lottie, 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 ta.
Well, and you say just veterinary medicine, but it's not, because again, like when we're sharing it at our hospital and our hospital feels it and they're putting it out to our clients, it's getting outside of veterinary medicine. And we, you know that there are clients out there that pick up on it, and reps and people that you work with that pick up some of those tips and those traits along the way. So it's beyond vet med, in my opinion.
Yeah. I'm just curious, because you had said that your previous leadership style was maybe a little bit more just like directive and just being like, this is what we have to do. I'm the boss. My way is mm-hmm. the best way. Do you mm-hmm. feel like that served you well, especially when you were in a more like cutthroat business, like you said, whether it be broadcasting or culinary? Like, do you feel like that actually worked? Or now that you are in a place where you needed more EQ, would it be possible that, like, if you were to go back in time and lead in a different way, could that have been effective there? Or do you feel like you adapted the leadership style that made sense for the environment that you were in?
I think a little bit of both. I think that style definitely helped me for the fields that I was in, restaurants especially. It was a male-dominated field back in that day. And it definitely, like, you had to kind of have that thick skin and that, like, that loudest voice. No, I know what's right. You're trying to prove it to everybody around you. You could turn restaurants into a much more healthier environment and turn it into a less toxic place. And I was at the right place in the right time, surely, to hear about it. And yeah.
Did you walk into vet med still feeling like directive was the way to go? And did you sort of learn from the responses from others and adapt?
Yes. So a little bit. Yes. And sometimes it was after the fact. There were definitely situations that I was more reactive than I wanted to be. There were situations where I would avoid, bad things altogether. If there was conflict amongst the team, or if we had a doctor that was making the nurses cry, I would literally go in the opposite direction and be like, you guys are grown ups, deal with it. I'm out. And to me,
avoidance.
Yes, big time. And at that time, I felt that I was justified in that because we're all grown ups and we're all responsible for our own feelings. So why do they need me to referee them? And it was, you know, now looking back, you see that it was a lack of empathy and a lack of leadership. You know, you can't just kind of leave people to fend for themselves when you're at the top. You've got to be right there beside them and get in with them. And if it's uncomfortable for them, be uncomfortable with them. If it's not fun, then it's okay. You can do that with them and sit in it until you're all in a better place. And so that, I definitely wish I had more of that when I first got into the field, because again, there's so many, we all know it's a rough field, and we all know how other hospitals deal with that, and how, I say other aside from mine, we deal with it too, but how any hospital deals with it. And it's not always the best way. And we see time and time again, if we get new people on our team and they're coming from a tougher environment and a more toxic environment, that it's this really bittersweet thing where you'll kind of, you'll see a few months for the dust to kind of settle, for them to like realize that they don't have to, you know, they're not in a prey situation. Like they can, you know, like they're safe. They can be who they are. They can do their job. And that to me shows me that there's a lot of hospitals out there suffering with that toxicity, and that, you know, it does come from leaderships. It's a trickle down effect. We all know that. And if you've got a leader that's saying, do as I do, not as I say, and I don't care how you do it, figure it out, they're not going to do well with it.
What was your aha moment? What was your like, holy crap, it's me, you know, I've got to do some changing.
Oh, I've had a few.
talk about some of those because I'm operating under the premise that you've had those, and I want to share to all of our listeners that literally is, you know, this is EQ in action. It is like you do some stuff, you get some feedback either directly or indirectly from the universe about how that stuff is received. And then you reflect on that and go, is that who I really am? And if it's not, you have an epiphany, and you direct your energies towards becoming what you want to be instead of how you're acting. And so that's what we mean by an aha moment. And so what have been one or some of those that have directed you?
The more I kind of learned about EQ and how to have some of those conversations and like, oh, there's actually a way to work through conflict, and there's a way you don't have to just explode and say horrible things and then run away and apologize and that's the end of it. Like you can actually talk through it and you don't have to explode. That was a big moment. I come from an Irish Scottish family. Ooh, with preach. Lots of tempers.
Yes, me too.
And we explode. That's how we, you know, like we get to a point and we're just like, okay, anger boil, and that's it. You know, just working through some of those conversations at that EQ conference. And there was a book that I was reading probably about a year or so later, and it was one of the Chelsea Handler books. I can't remember which one. And she was talking about empathy and how she, at some point in her 40s, realized that she was not empathetic at all. And she started kind of explaining how she knew that. And I was like, oh God, that's me. Like I'm the same way. And you just start having those uncomfortable conversations with yourself.
Yes.
And you don't have to do it in a team setting. You don't have to do it at work. You don't have to do it, you know, by anybody else's book, but your own. Whether or not we want to face that, that's the tricky part. But really kind of looking in the mirror and looking at those things that you're not too proud of, and those conversations that you've had with previous employees, and okay, yeah, like I should have said this instead of this, I could have gone this way instead of this way, I could have potentially helped this person, they might still be on our team, and that the more you learn, the better it's going to get.
So you got turned on to VGP and EQ and pathway planning, and then you brought it to your practice. How did this get introduced to your whole team? Because, and then we want to hear a little bit about the evolution of your practice, because I'm going to make an assumption that it's grown, that it's gotten better, that things are cool.
It's an amazing practice with the new owner. So Dr. Kratochi, who came in with VGP. And so...
Okay, so she purchased your practice. And this was like how long ago?
This was 6 years ago. It's going to be 7 years this summer.
Yeah. All right. So she would have been one of our original members too, because we've been around longer than that, but not much longer.
Yeah. So she started to bring it in, and we started to work with Julia, with her practice coach, pretty early on. And we had a visit, I think, I want to say Jason he came out to visit our practice way back in the day.
Wow.
And we just kind of started to learn the concept there. And it didn't really hit me until that first conference. We went to Boston. Was that my first? That might have been my second one. But I think at Boston, whatever was in the water there, I don't know if it was the seafood, I don't know it was in how you spoke, but whatever happened, we were so excited to bring it back home and turn it into the team and kind of unleash the team onto it. And so we started doing our top five opportunities and our mission statement and our core values and folding them into every team meeting and every team building. And, we brought in a no gossip clause, and we really just talk to everybody as much as we can about making this a place for us, not for anybody else, but for us. This is our place where we can come to support each other. We can come to learn from each other, to talk to each other, to give each other feedback. That toxicity of all of that stuff, we wanted out the door.
I love that. This is our place. Let's make a place for us. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah. And that was Dr. Kratochi. I mean, that was her vision coming into it. And she has worked tirelessly to make that happen ever since. And, you do lose people. And that I think initially for me was the scary part of the people that we lost weren't the people I thought we would lose. But now, of course, looking back, it's like, okay, it's exactly what should have been. It's kind of this
the right people in the right seats.
Exactly. Yeah. Big time.
Out of how many employees did you have when you started doing pathway planning?
Probably closer to 30.
Okay. And of those original 30, how many are still working there?
I think there are five of us still there. Yeah.
Okay. And I say that to everybody. Folks, listen, look, it's all good.
Yes. Yeah, it's not a bad thing.
I bet she's not having a hard time finding people to hire.
No, of
that stuff. Because I get so tired. I want to just say this to our listeners. I get so tired of hearing you all say, I can't find anybody to hire. I can't find anybody to hire. Start treating people right. Start paying them enough.
They come to
Start
you.
Offering them something. And nobody talks as much as veterinary nurses and doctors do to one another behind the scenes.
Yeah.
If you have a hard time finding people, you're kind of shitty to work for. That's my experience.
Yeah. I can't agree with you more. We used to be in that situation where if we lost someone, it was like, oh my God, where are we going to find a replacement? We've had a doctor retire. We've had a doctor move out of state. We've had nurses do the same thing. We have not placed an ad for a nurse or a doctor in a while. And we haven't needed to. Our last doctor that left, that moved states away, who still does surgery when she's in town to visit us, we didn't have to put an ad out to replace her. We had a replacement ready to go. It was seamless. When we're trying to add nurses and kind of bulk up our staff for summer and we're getting a new doctor on and things like that, we don't have to look far. If we place an ad, we get 10 amazing nurses with experience, with great backgrounds that are there ready to take it. And that is something that I don't think I would have believed probably 3 or 4 years ago even would be the case. But it is. It's so Field of Dreams. If you build it, they will come. And it's true. I mean, you don't think that it would be. And you I would hear it from reps of like how special our place is and how, everybody's so happy and you guys have such a great, great team spirit. And you learn that it's true when all of a sudden you're going, okay, we have to hire two nurses. Where are we going to find them? And there's four there that are trying to get the job. It's great.
How do you make those expectations about communication and all those things well known enough that it's not, I mean, obviously it's still woven into your culture, but like you said, a lot of people that are coming from other practices often don't have the kind of environment that you're describing. So what is that training like for somebody who's new to this environment, who might not be used to feedback, direct communication, no gossiping? What is that transition often like for them?
We don't, you know, I really don't want to give them too much room to think about it. So I just kind of do it seamlessly. It's, you know, in the interview process, we talk about how you are with feedback. We talk about our core values. So we kind of get a little of an idea there. And then once they're hired, you know, the training aspect is different, but as far as like the EQ and that culture, it's just expected. So it's not, I don't take them aside and say, okay, so we do this different and, you know, we expect you to do this. We expect you to not gossip. We lead by example. And we might say something, you know, on the first day or two of like, you know, here we are, this door is always open. You come and talk to any of us anytime you need to. We want feedback. We're going to give you feedback. We want to hear from you what's working, what's not working. And if we feel that we're not getting anything from you, we're going to track you down. So just be aware of it. Like, you know, we're just going to grab you and we're going to talk to you. And we have scheduled check-ins. So we have a few things in play also that help build that. We have scheduled check-ins every month with the entire team that we separate amongst our leadership team. So myself, my head nurse, my head CSR, and my business owner, Dr. Kurtachi, the four of us rotate amongst the whole staff every month, and we do a 30-minute sit down with everybody so that we know what's going on with everybody. And we share those notes. We have an open document that we share all the notes with so that we're all aware of it.
Wow.
We have weekly emails that I send out. And so we do process updates. We do kudos. The team sends in kudos to each other. You know, so-and-so did a great job helping Mrs. Smith out with the food that she bought. And, you know, just little things of encouragement and appreciation. So that goes out every week. We have team meetings, and our team meetings usually have some sort of theme. We have, you know, a set agenda on them. We talk about EQ. We talk about our core values. We talk about the five opportunities for growth. All of that is a recurring theme. And we might focus more on this core value one month and this core value the next. But it's just something that we fold into the norm so that it's not a, we don't need to sit you down and tell you what to expect. It's just everywhere around you. You have to join our pod people.
Yeah. Other than the obvious success of the culture of your team that's come from all the emotional intelligence work and things like that and your leadership style, what other changes have you actually seen in practice? Like how has the practice shifted? I mean, you know, everything from bottom line to anything else. Like what else has changed?
Yeah, I want to hear your scorecard.
right.
Your dashboard, girl. The dashboard. How's our EBITDA? How are those labor costs, drug and supplies?
We're doing pretty good. We're a really healthy practice. And it's one of those things with HR, you know, HR is always, I think, the trickiest part because it's people. And when we're communicating and when we're on the same page and we're all efficient and that's a nice, clear, open line, the business does great. Our clients are happy. We're more efficient. We're able to fit more appointments in. Our doctors are happier. Our nurses are happier. There's a better work-life balance. And we can afford to do more for our team because we're cranking in appointments. So it really is that big picture. You're not just, you know, you don't just work on your HR, or work on your team culture to fix a headache of having to deal with it. You work on it because it's a healthier way of being and it's a happier way of being. And then you see the money trickle in and you see the appointments trickle in and then it's truly a, you know, triple threat.
So where have you gone to? Like you can share in percentages but what has the growth been like in your tenure there?
We've seen steady growth. I mean, anywhere from 5 to 10% pretty much every year. We're continuing to grow.
So you've doubled in size since you started there,
though. Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
And what are the goals? What are the goals for the future? Like, do you want other locations? Is it to continue to do what you're doing? Is it to set yourself up to, you know, to be a part of another organization? Like, what are your, would you have long-term goals now that you've stabilized, or is it?
I think now is the fun part where we get to play more with the medicine. So we've got a new ultrasound machine. Our doctors are getting certified with that. So just kind of doing more with medicine. We're expanding our hospital too. I know in the next couple of years, we're going to end up knocking down some walls and making more exam rooms and expanding our basement, potentially expanding some of our back boarding rooms that we don't use anymore. So yeah, we've got some really fun plans in place over the next few years for that.
Wow, how exciting. Well, what would be your piece of advice to somebody coming into veterinary medicine from the outside, you know, non-medically trained, and they wanted to build a career for themselves?
I would say to absolutely do it. It's a phenomenal field to be in, and we need more people in it that enjoy it. You know, you're not going to make a ton of money in it unless you're potentially a practice owner. but, you know,
yeah, that's true.
It's true. But it's a really good field to be in. You're helping people, you're helping animals, you're helping each other. It's kind of the whole kit and caboodle with that aspect. It's challenging. It's wonderful. I would say keep your mind open and try to always just be willing to listen, be willing to learn, and not to give up, because even if the culture of your hospital that you're at right this second isn't what you want, even if there's tension, even if it's tricky, there are other hospitals out there, or there is a way for you to stay and make your hospital the way you want it. It doesn't matter what position you're in, anybody can start that change and can start to get people on board with it. So if you're not, you know, if you're in a hospital or if you're just starting off in a hospital and it's not quite what you want it to be, make that change. Be the change, and people around you will get on board.
That sounds like that's your overriding life message.
Yes.
No, really, seriously, because that's, I would say, what makes Kate's journey special is this belief that she could keep reinventing herself until she found what it is that works for her. You know, and that instead of waiting for life to happen to you, you happened in your own life, showed up in your own life. Would that be an apt description?
Hugely. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, hugely.
Well, kudos to you.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you. It's that adaptableness.
Yeah. I think that one of the big things I'd like to sort of end on really is overall how you really define success in your personal life. And that's really, really what we want to close with is what does that look like for you?
I think personally success looks like happiness. I'm not materialistic. I'm not much of a showboater. I want to be happy at the end of the day. I want to be proud of how I acted that day, of what I put out there. And I want the people in my life to be happy and to be loved, and success of our team as the happiness of our team. Are they showing up healthy? Are they showing up, you know, rested? Are they happy to be there? Do they come together? Do they enjoy what they do? And if that answer is yes, then I think we're successful. And it's been an amazing journey to see this team become that way. And it's a humbling one every day to work with a team that truly does feel like a success, because they do have so much joy for what they do and for each other. It's wonderful.
I love it. What a beautiful way to close out, really. And honestly, it sounds like a place that people are going to maybe want to bookmark, check out, watch you guys online if they're moving into the area.
yep. Come on by anytime.
Well, thank you so much for being a guest and for your support of Veterinary Growth Partners. And if you come to any of our future conferences, let's go have a drink and celebrate the podcast.
Yes, I will be there for sure. And thank you so much for having me. It's been a really fun opportunity. We appreciated it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.